Hi there, and welcome to StudyClicks Explains. We have teamed up once again with Peter Tobin to bring you a mini podcast series all about Shakespeare's King Lear. Peter Tobin is an English teacher who has a YouTube channel called Mr. Tobin Leaving Cert English, where you can find loads of free videos covering different parts of the Leaving Cert English course. We have linked his channel in the description, and we can't recommend enough that you go check it out and subscribe to get updates on new content he's making. For StudyClicks Explains, Peter has recorded a series of episodes where he goes into specific aspects of what you need to know about King Lear. He aims to equip you with not just the basics of this Shakespeare play, but also the knowledge on how to give deeper interpretations that will help you score higher marks in your exam. This is the first episode in the series. So to kick us off, Peter is going to give us some background to the play, exploring when and why Shakespeare wrote this play in the first place. The next voice you're going to hear is Peter's, so enjoy listening.
Hello and welcome to this StudyClicks Explains podcast, looking at Shakespeare's King Lear. We're going to take a look at some background to the play first, go through the plot, look at the characters and themes, as well as some examples of the sort of language and imagery that you can write about in the Leaving Cert English exam. So, let's get started. King Lear was completed in the year 1606 and was first performed in front of King James I on the 26th of December of that year at Whitehall in London. Where King Lear comes from, however, is a matter of some debate. There are, in fact, a number of versions of King Lear. There was an early version using the title King Lear, L-E-I-R, and it's possible that it's part of Shakespeare's early works. According to the Shakespeare biographer, Peter Ackroyd, it's more probable, however, that it was a play that as an actor Shakespeare took part in, and later he rewrote it for his own acting company, The King's Men. Actors on the Elizabethan and Jacobean stage had to learn off many, many lines, often to more than one play at a time. And as such, it's not really surprising that there's so much borrowing of plots and phrases, sometimes whole lines and more, between various playwrights of the time. Much of it would have been accidental. To be accused of plagiarism or copying was a fairly standard accusation of the time anyway, and would not really have damaged Shakespeare's or any other playwright's reputation. Shakespeare was a master at manipulating language to create effect and communicate meaning. Sometimes when words that existed weren't quite enough for what he wanted to do, he would invent new ones, and somehow people still knew what he meant, what he was trying to get across. He created multifaceted, complex characters with the words that he put on the page. He built whole societies, whole worlds, with little more than scratches of ink on paper. Shakespeare wasn't quite as interested, however, in creating or inventing plots for his plays. Many of his most famous plays are based on existing stories or even existing plays. Famous works such as Macbeth, Romeo and Juliet, and Hamlet are all based on ideas and stories that existed before. None of them are original to Shakespeare. Similarly, with King Lear, we find that the story existed long before Shakespeare. The story of King Lear, like the origin stories of a number of Shakespeare's plays, can be found in a book called Holinshed's Chronicles, a sort of history book of the time. In the Chronicles, we see the story of a king called Lear in pre-Christian England who has decided to divide his kingdom amongst his daughters. The story is remarkably similar to the play that we know. There are, however, some interesting differences. The ending of the story in the Chronicles, just like the earlier version entitled King Lear, is a happy one. Lear and Cordelia are reunited. Together, they take back the kingdom that he had given away, and after Lear's eventual death, Cordelia inherits all. The bleakness of Shakespeare's ending is entirely his own invention. Another book that was popular at the time was a book called Essays, translated from French by a man called John Florio. We know that this was an influence on Shakespeare, as there are approximately 100 words in that book that are new to the English language, and they appear in King Lear. Similarly, yet another book, Arcadia by Sir Philip Sidney, appears to have given Shakespeare the inspiration for the subplot of Gloucester, Edgar and Edmund. As you can see, Shakespeare borrowed from all around him, and then he turned his own creative talents upon the borrowed material to make something hugely impressive. Yet another potential source for King Lear comes from a story that Shakespeare would have been familiar with and who a friend of his, the Earl of Southampton, actually had first-hand experience of. An older gentleman was becoming senile in his later years. He had three daughters. The elder two daughters wanted him to be declared insane so they could take control of his estate, but a third daughter, astonishingly called Cordelle, went to Lord Cecil to make the case that her father was fine. The father died in 1604, but because of his youngest daughter's kindness, he left almost everything he had to her. Cordell then went on to marry a man called Sir William Harvey, who is the stepfather of Shakespeare's friend, the Earl of Southampton. Shakespeare was not precious about his work, certainly not at the beginning anyway. Plays were not seen as literature and were written for pure entertainment. For the vast majority of his life, Shakespeare's plays were not collected together or published in any coherent form. To emphasise this, Shakespeare rewrote and edited and changed his plays often. Aside from the early version called King Lear, there are actually two versions of Shakespeare's King Lear. They are considered different enough from each other that the new Oxford edition of his plays contains both. These two are called the Quarto, which is the earlier one, and the Folio, which is the later one. According to Peter Ackroyd again, the central differences between the two versions show us the changes Shakespeare made were all about the drama of the plot. The Folio version focuses more closely on Lear himself, and there is a quicker pace to the events. It's less of a history giving you all the information about everything happening at the time, and more of a character study, a tragedy, if you will. That draws us in to examine one character in close detail. There's also a potential nod to censorship. So the Master of Revels, an early version of the censorship board, would most likely not have looked kindly on a play showing a French army on English soil, as we see in the Quarto version, but which is only hinted at in the Folio version. Finally, as all subjects in Elizabethan and Jacobean England had to do, we must think of the king. King James I came to the throne in 1606 and shortly after made Shakespeare and his company of actors the king's men. Shakespeare took this role and the status that comes with it very seriously. The play, despite its bleakness and particularly the grim ending, deals with some things that King James himself was particularly interested in. King James was already the King of Scotland when he came to the English throne, so he unified the two kingdoms. In Act 3 of the play, Shakespeare even changed the word English in the Quarto version to the word British in the Folio version. King James was deeply concerned with creating a unified kingdom of Great Britain. In a book that he himself had written for his son, he warned that by dividing your kingdoms, ye shall leave the seed of disillusionment and discord among your posterity. Essentially saying that dividing your kingdoms would lead to ruin. King Lear then can be seen as an exploration of a theme that the watching king would have been very interested in. For all its darkness and challenges, it's perhaps unsurprising that King Lear was not a very popular play with audiences. There are few recorded performances of it from when it was written up until the late 1670s. In fact, for the 200 years or so, from the 17th to the 19th century, it was a rewritten version, it was rewritten by an Irishman, that was performed on the English stage. In this rewritten version, everything ends well. Cordelia marries Edgar, and everyone lives happily ever after. What's fascinating about King Lear is that Shakespeare deliberately changed the source material to include such a harrowing and bleak ending as the one we have in the Lear that we study for the Leaving Cert. What was he trying to communicate through his work? As a playwright who was always so closely attuned to the audience's wants and needs, why did he persist with an ending that they obviously found too distressing? He changed so many of his plays so often. Why did he not change the ending of this one?
That concludes the first episode of the series. We hope that this analysis will help you to understand the reasons why Shakespeare wrote this play. Once again, if you enjoyed this, then we would really encourage that you go check out Peter's YouTube channel, Mr. Tobin Leaving Cert English, which is linked in the description. Trust us when we say that this is an incredible free resource for 5th and 6th year students. And we hope that you stay tuned for more content like this.